I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee of November 12, 2015. And as a first item, I would ask for a verification of a quorum and appropriate notification.
Mr. Chairman, there is, well, we need to do the roll call.
Okay.
Roll call.
May we have the roll call, please?
Yes, thank you. Trustee Robert Boy, Trustee John Butler, Trustee Raquel Chavez, Trustee Wheeler Coleman, Trustee Sherilyn Muir, Trustee Tim Struthers,
here.
Board Chair Mark Strauss,
here.
Committee Chair Robert Marshall.
Present.
Thank you.
Now, if we could have that verification of a quorum and appropriate notification.
Mr. Chair, the meeting has been called pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, and you do have a quorum.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting? Trustee Strauss.
To approve the agenda that was pre-printed with two modifications. First, that item 7D be moved for consideration before item 7A, and second, that item 8B be moved for consideration before item 8A.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Those who approve, signify with aye. Thank you. Okay, now, do we want to go to... we've had a number of changes. Because of the time commitments, we've had to shift a few of the things on the agenda. We're still going to cover them, but we'll try to get through them as quickly as we can. I'd like to welcome everyone here today. We have at least four items for approval, including a request to delete an emphasis that would be in hospitality management with the within the nutrition, dietetics, and wellness Bachelor of Science program. A request for a constitutional amendment to Article 4 of the NIU Constitution. A request for a constitutional amendment to Article 7 of the NIU Constitution. And approval for athletics to obtain executive search firms for selected head coaching positions. Along with our approved items, there are three information items. The first will be our annual report on the overview of academic programs. The Executive Vice President and Provost Freeman will update us on the status of the program. And with the change, the second item is a report on online programming. Merrill Sussman, Assistant Vice President for Outreach, Adult, and Non-Credit Programming, will present information on NIU's Office for Online Program Development and Support. Its focus on quality in online instruction and its plans and strategies for positioning the university as a leader in quality online programming. The third item will be a discussion with the committee on future agenda items. Both agenda items that are standard to the committee and those that the board has requested. Now, before we go any further, the recognition, please, of our advisory committee members. I know that people have had to go on to other appointments, but for those, I see Dr. Long and Dan. Do we have comments?
Thank you for the opportunity. Just a couple of quick comments. I think very many of these probably already have some awareness of from the standpoint of as faculty and staff. Issues of morale and salary continue to be concerns for people. Resource cuts and limits on funding are being experienced as difficult to get through this year. I think people are pulling together, but we are, as faculty and staff, experiencing some stress with that. Would offer continued support for the program prioritization process. I think while it too is causing some stress among faculty and staff, in the long run it will be valuable and appreciate the support services and opportunities that have been available for the program authors on that. In fact, Provost Freeman is coming to our Faculty Senate meeting next week to give us some more opportunity to talk about this. So appreciate the focus on program prioritization and the supports that are being given in that. Would also say that as the University Advisory Committee, we're always interested in collaborating and providing feedback. So any specific questions that the board has for us, we're more than happy to answer questions, as well as certainly opportunities like this, just providing our feedback. And then the final thing I would say is that we are working very hard to educate both Faculty Senate and University Council members on basic issues associated with shared governance. We're also bringing in some people to provide resource information. We've had information presented on technology, on prioritization. Security is coming up in January. So we're working hard to educate and provide opportunities to let people know what's going on and also quell any rumors that might happen. So those are the major issues we're dealing with in academic affairs.
Thank you. Dr. Giebel, any commentary?
I do not.
Okay. I want to thank you and also to issue in the near future an opportunity for us to sit down over a cup of coffee so we can keep up with each other a little bit. Thank you.
Before we go any further, we do need to approve the minutes of our last committee meeting, and I would ask for a motion to do so.
I move to approve the minutes of August 27th, 2015.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And now we can go into the report. Okay. Do we have Mr. Blake Moore, anyone who wishes to speak before the board via the written notification?
We have not had any requests.
Okay. Well, at this point, we'll go into the university report, and I would ask our Executive Vice President and Provost, Dr. Freeman, to present the university report.
Thank you, Trustee Marshall. And I would like to thank everyone who's here representing an action or an information item for their patience with the slight changes in the schedule. Without further ado, I'd like to move on to what is now item 7A, the authorization to retain executive search firms to support selected searches for the Division of Athletics. We've moved this to the front of item 7 because I know that Associate Director Deborah Boughton can only be here for a short time. Basically, in keeping with the provisions of Public Act 97-08-104 and our own NIU policy on the use of external search firms, which was approved by the Board of Trustees on May 23, 2013, we are coming to the board to ask for authorization to use external hiring search firms for the possibility of the need to address the possibility of the need to hire coaches essentially over the Christmas break when there's often action and turnover in head coach positions. So I want to be clear, we don't have any known vacancies at this time, but because sometimes actions have to be taken on a short timeline over the holidays in the athletics world, we want to make sure that we're doing everything in keeping appropriately. And in this instance, the use of search firms is particularly important to their special expertise in candidate screening. I think we all know that you want to make sure that your coaches are well vetted regarding issues that you may have to dig a little to learn about. So our recommendation is that the president be authorized to select executive search firms to support selected searches for head coaches in the Division of Athletics. Further recommended that the president report plans to retain such search firms to the board as soon as practicable, and then periodically report back to the board regarding the selection and the status of such searches. The university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its December 10, 2015 meeting. So based on that recommendation, is there a motion?
And I have a second here.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
All right.
Approved.
Okay. The next request is for the deletion of an emphasis. Emphasis one, hospitality management within the nutrition, dietetics, and wellness program. And I know originally Tom Kavkoff and Beverly Henry were going to be here. I see that Dean Block is here. Dean Block, would you like to speak directly to this? Or would you like me to provide an overview? Absolutely. So the Bachelor of Science program in Nutrition, Dietetics, and Hospitality was recently renamed the Bachelor of Science program in Nutrition, Dietetics, and Wellness. This change followed the Illinois Board of Higher Education approval allowing NIU to offer a new program, the Bachelor of Science in Hospitality and Tourism Management. This was done really to make sure that our tourism and management program was more visible and to create programs that were more attractive to the market of students that we serve. The new degree replaces the need to offer the emphasis under the existing degree. Hence, our recommendation is that the university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorse this request to delete the deletion of Emphasis 1, Dietetics and Wellness, Bachelor of Science, Hospitality Management Emphasis, and we ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at the December 10, 2015 meeting.
I have a motion.
So moved, but I do have a question.
Okay.
Trustee Smith, had a question?
You probably need to get a second first.
Tim did.
Yeah, so my question is, do we have any students that are currently involved in trying to complete this emphasis that would be adversely affected if we eliminate it immediately?
Yeah, please, Dean Block, if you would respond to that at the microphone.
Students that are presently in our hospitality management program would still have their courses available with this new emphasis, with a new major. So they're right now in an emphasis. It really did this particular motion doesn't change our curriculum at all. It just pulls it out as its own major, pulls out. And because we pulled out hospitality and tourism management as its own major, the name of the emphasis needs to, we no longer have a necessity for that emphasis. So students would be able to continue and progress in their program without any problem.
So anybody who would have had an emphasis is instead going to have a major, same courses?
Yes, if they would decide to go with a new catalog, then they could go with the new major.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Okay. I have a
take both.
Motion, please. Or, I'm sorry.
Need a vote.
We have the vote coming at this point. Believe me, 4:30 in the morning, and I know there are a few others that got up early this morning, I will have to ask for your forgiveness on this, but I will try to stay awake throughout. All right. I will ask for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Approved.
All right. As I was also up very early this morning, coming home from that Husky victory in Buffalo, getting in the car at 4 a.m. to drive to the Buffalo airport, I'm going to ask my colleague, University Council Executive Secretary and Faculty Senate President Greg Long, to come to the microphone to talk about the next two items, the request for constitutional amendments. You can do it from your microphone. Yeah.
That makes life easier. Yes. Thank you for this opportunity. We have the first constitutional amendment to Article 4. It's very straightforward. Basically, what we're trying to do there is in the Constitution, as Article number 4 as currently written, it identifies the specific standing committees of University Council. And over time, those committees have changed, and we're also wanting some flexibility. So we'd like to, rather than specifying the exact standing committees as in the Constitution, we'd like to move that and simply say that the standing committees of the University Council shall be defined in the NIU bylaws. So move it to the bylaws rather than have it be specified within the Constitution. Gives us a little more flexibility if we want to make changes in the standing committees. It's then just a bylaw change rather than a need to change the Constitution.
Okay, we have a motion.
Do you want me to read the recommendation?
Perhaps I can suggest a friendly amendment for Trustee Boy that the motion read that university recommends the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorse the request in our printed material for this agenda item and request that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its December 10, 2015 meeting.
Thank you.
Second.
Any further discussion on the motion and the amendment?
I think that this amendment makes eminent good sense, and I'll be happy to vote for it. I know that this became ready at a time when we didn't have an imminent ad hoc committee on governance meeting, and we wouldn't have been able to get to it in the ad hoc governance committee meeting until after our December board meeting. But my preference is that as we have these items, we want to entertain them, and in fact, we have a block of time reserved in the ad hoc governance committee to be able to discuss changes such as these. We welcome them, but my preference would be in the future that we get these requests through that channel instead of directly to this committee.
Okay, sir.
Further discussion? Being numb, I will ask for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Approved.
All right. And, Greg, if you want to continue with the next item, which is a constitutional amendment to Article 7, again, around language related to personnel.
Right. Thank you. Yes. On Article number 7, we're looking at the related councils there. And the request is basically we'd like to make changes in the document such that there's a parallel construction across the students, operating staff, and university faculty. Right now, as it's currently stated, students are the only ones who are identified as, quote, integral to how the university system of governance. Also, we wanted to be more inclusive in terms of identifying the university community, such that that means specifically we're talking about faculty, staff, students, and administrators. So from a language standpoint, if you look at this, it's very straightforward that we're indicating across all three councils that, A, they're integral to the shared governance, and they're accepted by the university community. So that's the premise behind that.
May I have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorse the proposed amendment contained in our printed materials and ask the President to forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its December 10th, 2015 meeting.
Is there a second? Okay. Discussion? Calling for the vote. All in favor, please signify by saying aye. Approved.
Maybe we should say aye, aye, aye instead of just aye. Our next item under 8 in the university report is an information item related to online program development and support. This item is being presented in direct response to requests from a number of the trustees, and I'm pleased to turn the presentation over to Assistant Vice President for Outreach Adult and Non-Credit Programming, Merrill Sussman, who prepared this presentation with the collaboration of, I know, many others.
Yes, I want to acknowledge my colleagues who are here. Well, thank you for this opportunity to present what we think is a very exciting development at NIU. My colleagues, the Director of eLearning Services is Aileen Click, and Jennifer Howard, who is our specialist on video media and has helped me put the presentation together. In preparation for this, I started to think about when I first got involved with what I would call distance delivery of programs for adult learners, particularly. And it was many more years than I wanted to admit to, but I was in Massachusetts, and I had a department reporting to me, which was off-campus programs. They specialize in non-credit off-campus programs delivered to businesses and associations. But they were approached by the Union of Firefighters, who had noticed that or had been made aware that their promotional opportunities were limited because they didn't have college degrees. And they approached us, we were a state college, and asked if we could provide degree completion programs for them, But they had a problem. Their schedules were not friendly to coming to campus. And even if they could get to campus, the alarm bells would go off and they'd have to disappear. So what we started to do was to deliver our programs, this was many years ago, via computer and speakerphone to the firehouses. And when the alarms went off, class stopped and was resumed when the signal cleared. We graduated 150 firefighters who went on to have their careers in the service. So I became a proponent of bringing programming to the adult learners where they are. I'm going to quickly go through some of these items. Why should NIU be involved with online learning? A taste of our quality online learning already developed. How we are coordinating services to help faculty develop quality online learning. Our membership in Quality Matters. Services we provide through our e-learning, faculty development, the promotion of programs to the public, that represent the best of NIU online, and how we are trying to establish a community of online instruction and research that we can head up. I want to bring to your attention that Australia has moved ahead of the world in online learning and has reached out to some of our NIU experts to get involved with their process, and I just wanted to show you a snippet of what they discuss, why they feel online instruction is key to learning in the 21st century. Cindy?
By the time they leave school, teenagers average nearly 1,000 Facebook friends. They connect with people thousands of miles away as if they were in the same room. They consume, produce, and communicate information in previously unimaginable ways. They truly are the children of a globalized world.
Can we pause it while we get the video up?
And where are they heading as they grow up? To a hyper-connected...
We just tried this out and it worked. We have a technical person. There we go.
Facebook friends. They connect with people thousands of miles away as if they were in the same room. They consume, produce, and communicate information in previously unimaginable ways. They truly are the children of a globalized world. And where are they heading as they grow up? To a hyper-connected world with more people and fewer resources. A busy and competitive world full of uncertainties. A workforce that is more mobile and better qualified than ever before. And careers that span multiple jobs, positions and skill sets, some of which haven't been invented yet. In response, education leaders are making big changes. Building 21st century skills, using enabling technologies, and personalizing learning to engage students in diverse and creative ways. In South Korea, schools are switching to digital textbooks so students can study anytime and anywhere with online hours recognized as school attendance. In Denmark, students are using the internet while taking exams. They can access any site they like, even Facebook, as long as they don't message each other or use email. In the USA, ultra-personalized learning approaches allow students to create their own individual schedules. Their interests and performance are logged daily to generate playlists of learning options, with teachers' time freed up to mentor and supervise students. The opportunities for 21st century education are immense. These examples point the way to ensuring that tomorrow's workers, parents, and citizens are more creative problem solvers, better communicators, and lifelong learners. To make sure that change happens on a massive scale, we need to make big changes. That's why we've designed the new Australian curriculum online, supported by interactive, constantly updated digital resources, structured around students' and teachers' needs.
Okay, so... All right. So why NIU should get involved with online learning? Well, we have over 3 million adult learners in the greater Chicagoland area who have some college but no degree. That we can provide accessibility to them because of their time to learn is constrained by work and family demands. We can enrich interactions among learners however far apart they are living or working. And we can meet learning style needs. Not everyone learns in the same way. And one of the possibilities through online learning is that you can do audio, you can do video, you can let students repeat certain lessons until they get it. We can enhance communication. I'll show you some examples, but people from everywhere can talk to each other or break into small groups, come back together through the new technologies that are available. We also are teaching them the skills, as this Australian video showed. The skills to be successful in the 21st century are different from the skills that we perhaps needed before. And by learning to use technology, they're learning about technology. And finally, we are leaders in this field. Our programs in ETRA have won prizes, have been labeled number one programs in the nation. And we have researchers who are really ahead of the curve on learning how people learn online. So this is an NIU strength. I just want to show you a little taste of what it's like to learn online. This video is an instructor introducing himself to his students in his first lesson. I should say that this instructor brings students together for a face-to-face meeting because he finds that that sets them up for communicating online.
Hi, everyone, and welcome officially to ETT 510 Instructional Media and Technology. By now you know I'm Dr. Jason Rohde. I'm your instructor for the course. Looking forward to being with you as we're going to be taking a look at instructional design, instructional media, and a systematic process by which you can design, develop, and actually implement instruction in a variety of different settings. Since we've already met at the face-to-face orientation, you already have put a face with my name, and we've become acquainted. Just wanted to record this quick video greeting for you. I've been teaching online now for over a decade, and this is the first course where I'm going to extensively try to use video, these video greetings, like this one that you see right here. So throughout the course, you're going to be hearing and seeing from me in video format. Rather than just hearing me, I figured I'm just going to record myself, and you'll be able to see that. So I'll have introductions to each of our units in our course. You can watch for those. We will be meeting online, as you know, several different times throughout the course for online lecture discussion type sessions. But for all weeks, you'll also see and hear from me at the beginning of each week, each unit, where I'll be kind of setting the stage for the unit, giving you a few pointers, things to look for as you are preparing to go through the readings, resources, and activities that we have.
Thank you. I just want to show you another advantage of online. In this course, we had a guest speaker, and the guest speaker's presentation was recorded so students could view it if they, for any reason, needed to accommodate their personal schedule. No.
Excuse me, I skipped. For ETT,
I skipped this video. Could you go to the next one? Thank you.
For over 17 years, NIU eLearning Services has
And I would like to take now, as we end this particular segment, a moment to have a couple of speakers, again, give you their perception on language and its sense of how it can be used to include them and make them feel part of a group versus having them feel excluded.
The term wheelchair bound, I kind of giggle on that one because I'm not duct taped to this darn thing. You know, I can get around with no problem. The quad thing, that's a label. The para thing, that's a label. I'm not a paraplegic. I have paraplegia, so there's a little difference in terminology there. I think the only two terms that really offend me But again, I tell people if they mention these two words and say, hey, you know what, this is, means that you're kind of looking down on me, is GIMP or cripple. I think those are horrible words. I don't hear it from too many able-bodied people, but I hear it a lot from disabled people. That's what they use themselves. They call themselves GAMPs or cripples or something. And I'm thinking, you're really just demeaning yourself because this is not who you are. You just happen to have a disability. And why are you constantly, I mean, being self-deprecating? Mm-hmm. You know, it's...
Okay, thank you. Okay, one of the things that we work on with faculty who are thinking about moving their courses to an online delivery is we talk about what they love in their current course, and we look at ways to equate it with the new technology so they don't lose what they really, really enjoy and what their students enjoy when they go to an online delivery. They work with e-learning to look at what's the technologies I can employ to keep student presentations, to have simulations, to hold my office hours with students at a distance. One of the things that I had mentioned already, which I wanted to emphasize, is that through online, we're able to present materials in a variety of ways, which gives students of different learning abilities and different learning approaches, different options. So there's, for people who are visual, there's opportunities to see text that's being delivered in an audio way. We are able to interpret graphs with text so that students can see and read about a diagram or an exhibit that's put on an online class. I also wanted to mention that being online doesn't mean being disconnected. In fact, whenever someone talks about online, they say you can learn at any time. I always caution them because online very often has synchronous meetings where everyone in the course is going to meet together remotely, but they're all expected to be present during certain hours so they can interact in real time. And it allows people, as I talk about the firemen, who have to be positioned in a certain location during class time to actually participate in class discussions. Last year, the provost and the vice president for outreach formed collaboratively a new office called Online Program Development and Support. We call it OPDS. The idea was to make it easier to seamlessly contribute to the development of quality, high-quality NIU online programs so that we could attract audiences that cannot come to DeKalb to take classes during the day. So we put together the e-learning services, the faculty development folks who work with helping faculty become online instructors. We put together some promotional team who can message out to external audiences about the availability of programs. And finally, we were very concerned that as a research university that we focus on research in this field and contribute to the ongoing advancement of online learning. The advantages of this approach is to definitely make it easier for a faculty member who says, I'm interested in exploring online learning. They walk through one door, and then we package the services that they might want to take advantage of. This video, please. This video will give you an overview.
For over 17 years, NIU e-learning services has partnered with faculty and instructors to help develop online credit courses. In order to assure our students are getting the best possible experience, we have been following the Quality Matters model for over 13 years, formally adopting the course assessment tool in 2014. Services provided by e-learning include instructional design and development, graphic design, video production, audio editing, transcriptions, interactive simulations and games, case studies, and development of other innovative engaged learning activities. We have collaborated with numerous colleges and departments to deliver high-quality instruction. The first step in developing an online program is a customized program framework, which provides consistency of design, benefiting students so they can focus on learning without struggling to find course materials. Our design process is based on open communication between the instructor or content expert and the instructional designer. Courses are then designed to use the most appropriate technologies to engage students and meet their learning needs. Providing accessibility is a priority and includes audio over PowerPoints and transcriptions for students with visual impairments for all lectures and videos. Through collaboration with other institutions, we can provide blended learning experiences. For example, a Burmese language course was held at NIU and included students located at the University of Wisconsin. A unique classroom outfitted with a smart board, video cameras, high-quality microphones, and Adobe Connect is supported by e-learning technical staff to ensure a high-quality product, critical in a foreign language course. Adobe Connect is also used to provide instructor presence in online courses. Connect offers a wealth of highly interactive learning tools, and sessions can be recorded for students and faculty to review at a later time. E-learning is most proud of our ability to provide dynamic, interactive simulations and assessment tools. For example, our team developed several games based on popular television game shows to provide an alternative to basic multiple-choice quizzes. The versatility of these games are that they can be reused for any topic simply by changing the questions and answers. The use of video in online courses provides another form of engagement. Our staff helps faculty develop quality short videos such as guest speakers, demonstrations, role-playing, case studies, and exhibits to further expand on course topics. E-learning services also works with external clients, such as the Illinois Math and Science Academy, the American Bar Association, and the Illinois Public Pension Fund Association. These projects allow us to stretch our skills and provide continuing education and outreach for NIU and its partners. NIU's e-learning services continues to focus on quality and engaging online materials and adapt to the needs of a diverse learning population and ever-changing online technologies.
And that's the final skill of quiz. And what would be, what tools are available for engaged online learning? And you have choices, and of course, it's all of the above. Thank you. All right, you saw a summary of many of these points, but I just wanted to talk to you about e-learning services and its place in a university. Our e-learning staff are there are 11 professionals, many of whom have doctorates in the field, and they employ the graduate assistants in some of our own programs to work with them on getting the experience and doing research in learning delivered through technology. We have become a subscriber of Quality Matters. Just a word about that. Quality Matters is an international organization who has a rubric of guidelines for a high-quality student experience online. They do not delve into content. They talk merely about the structure of a course for better student outcomes. It's based on faculty and peer review and faculty research in the field of online learning. We have been following Quality Matters rubrics and something we call NIU Online Quality. All our instructional designers work to their standards. So faculty who are working with an instructional designer will have embedded in their course structure the most recent and best practices in excellence in online learning. We also support faculty who want to put some online learning within their face-to-face courses. We do that through our faculty development services, where we tailor our services to faculty based on what they, on their own self-assessment of what they already know. We provide each faculty member with a online teaching concierge who works one-on-one to give them the skills they want and need for their instruction in online space. We are also setting up online communities of faculty. We are reaching out to faculty, asking them to participate in different ways with the Quality Matters initiative. And then as they move into leadership, what we'd like to do is have them actually work with researchers to look at the success, the advancement of online learning at NIU. The provost is planning to start an advisory committee on online learning, which will include faculty who are engaged in online learning to look at issues, barriers, concerns, as we go more and more into this field. We are offering online teaching circles where faculty can get together around topics of interest just to talk to each other. And we have put on the last slide people to contact if you have an interest in any of these particular areas. I look at online learning as a way for NIU to serve new audiences. Those are adults and working students who cannot come to our daytime on-campus programs and would find access to NIU through technology-enhanced instruction. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mel.
Comments,
you
please?
Answer any questions the trustees may have directly.
Tim? You have a great presentation. Exciting stuff. Curious if you or professionals in your space would have an idea of how much of the total learning in the university range is e-learning today, and then what do you think about, if you had to say a number 10 years from now, what are you all saying about that?
Well, that actually is a very interesting number to try to have. I have a brochure that lists our current totally online programs. And by the Higher Learning Commission, this is a long way around, but you'll understand the complexity. The Higher Learning Commission allows an online program to have up to 25% of face-to-face meetings. So, but we know that we figure, I would think right now, about 10 to 15% of our credit hour production is through online learning, but that could be students who are on campus who choose to enroll in one online course because of a host of reasons, whether they're following a particular faculty member, whether the course is offered in at a time when it's more accessible to them, or sometimes there's one section of the course and it's going to be offered online, so they opt into that section. Where it will be in 10 years, I think that routinely faculty members are going to be incorporating online learning in all courses. Our students are coming to campus with a great dexterity with using online tools, and class time can be better spent in very active engagement in different ways when students can work online for some of the background information. Just a short story. My daughter teaches in a law school. That's part-time as an adjunct professor. 3 years ago when she gave a lecture, she planned to tell all the facts about certain legislation. The next time she mentioned it, 3 years later, everyone took out their iPhones and looked it up. And her lesson collapsed because they had the information. Now she had to teach how one applies that. You know, so she said, and she's in her early 30s, she said, my own world has shifted. So the paradigm of student learning has changed, which is why I started with that Australian, because they're looking at that setting.
Just a quick comment maybe for Lisa. This is, I'm sure you're well ahead of me here, this idea of scorecarding. This would be a great, you know, measure, right, of the pie chart shift between e-learning and traditional courses. I think it much like telephone banking versus teller transactions, right? There's a change taking place, and love to keep an eye on this.
Right. The other thing, oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, in response to Trustee Souther's comments, I agree with you completely. And I think we have to realize, too, that we have to be very thoughtful with the metrics, because if we looked 5 years ago, we would have sat here and said, you know, we have very distinct populations. We have the adult learners who can't come to campus. We have our native freshmen. We have opportunities that are business to business. We have our outreach centers. And we would see those all as discrete silos of students or packages of students. And then they would have maybe a little bit of overlap. And that has completely come together. Okay. We have students who would prefer to sit in their dorm room and take most of their classes online and maybe one or two labs face-to-face for whatever reasons there are. And we also have a very number of new paradigms emerging in higher ed where the ability to use online modules, to unbundle them and to repackage them and to offer them to different types of audience, whether it's businesses, whether it's working professionals, whether it's students in high schools who are preparing to come to the university. So I think as we develop those dashboards and metrics now and we track what goes on in the way that you suggest, we're also going to have to be constantly rethinking what we're measuring, right? Because the world is changing very quickly.
So Lisa, the future classroom size is going to be much smaller. Maybe.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. Maybe we'll take bets on it.
I didn't hear the question.
I was saying that the future classroom size could be much smaller because of online.
Mm-hmm. Or yes, it could be larger because more people are coming into a set. You know, one of the things you can do is bring communities together over great distances. And we have some programs that are unique. And this offers an opportunity for us to serve a larger and more diverse population. We also have a program who's moving online and saying that she's getting student inquiries from Japan and other places because it's now accessible and they are internationally known experts in their field. So it's opportunities for the institution to bring its best to a wider community. I also want to say that we have research that shows that for adult learners in particular, and I think a lot of other learners, you'll notice that one of those snippets the instructor said, we were together in Naperville. And we know that people like to meet the people that they're going to communicate with. And that's still a presence. 65% of online learners tend to take online courses with universities that are within 100 miles of where they live and work because they like the idea that they can go or meet or be close to some of the people that they're engaging with.
Since I had hands coming up from both sides, let me get Trustee Strauss, Trustee Coleman, and then Trustee Marshall.
I've got a couple areas I'd like to explore. The first is economic. So we are in an environment where we keep hearing that the cost of higher education is no longer affordable. We see that MOOCs are being introduced, and there are a wide variety of online offerings that are available. So I appreciate the background information regarding quality. But I think embedded in the conversation that we read in the public press is an assumption that online course delivery is cheaper than other portions, than other approaches to instructional delivery. So along those lines, I'm wondering, what does it cost to develop a wholly online course offering?
Well, we estimate the labor cost with the instructional designer is about $10,000 for a course. However, that does not address the cost of infrastructure, which is needed, and the tools that are needed to bring the technology to the course. The difference, I think, is that you potentially can deliver your programs to wider audiences or build new audiences for them. So your reach in terms of revenue streams can enlarge.
But at higher cost, because then you have marketing costs and you have off-hour requirement for registration and records, financial aid, bursar. So what I'm trying to do is at least get some background information, because we're not going to resolve all of these things today, as to how the sort of street wisdom lines up with what's actually involved with offering a course. And then the follow-up question that I'm going to have is, if we have somebody who doesn't want to scale it but wants an online component to the course that they're currently offering at NIU, who bears the cost of that instructional development? How does it get paid for so that I have some idea about our capacity to be able to deliver it?
Does anyone want to speak to it? Because I'll answer it. But Aline?
Yeah, I just want to say, though, I'd like to back up just a little bit. You need it on the record. You need me to be on the record. I need it on the microphone so we can have it on our record, please. Thank you. I just want to back up a little bit on the $10,000 cost. That's the first time. I mean, it's for the first delivery. Those courses are offered many times, maybe many sections. So we need to just spread that cost out a little bit. Redevelopment is of courses, and updating is also part of what we provide. As far as helping faculty and staff with those component pieces that are in online courses, that's not currently part of our services.
That's
faculty development does that. Do training, but it is obviously difficult for sometimes for faculty who are experts in one field and then to also become video producers or, you know, learning some of these other tools. So we do our best in helping support faculty where we can.
I think the question about off-hours support for students is one of those realities if you go into the market with and you want to capture the working adult population, whether it's face-to-face, whether they're driving to campus for an evening class, which it's true at some state universities. They expect their services to be available at night when they're on campus. So the expansion of service time, what can be done electronically? What needs to be communicated face-to-face or on the phone or et cetera? It's a different service paradigm for a different audience.
I'd like to go to a different area for just a second, too, briefly. But I'm interested in the assessment of quality portion of this as well. So intuitively, and I'm sure for anybody who is an instructor, you discover that different people learn different subjects in different ways. And what's unclear to me is how you make the assessment as to the manner in which or the effectiveness of an online course offering compares to what happens through either a traditional classroom setting or a mixed mode, and then whether there is some way to predict whether it's more effective for a particular student, because it occurs to me that the result wouldn't be the same for every student. And since you're engaged some in this process, I'm wondering whether there is any learning that you have achieved yet as to how one goes about evaluating that so that you know how to selectively make priority decisions about how to deploy this technology.
I rely on the research experts in my group to point that out, but I will tell you what we are very conscious of and what anyone in the online learning effort is conscious of. You're absolutely right. Not everyone learns in the same way. And for some people, the online learning is not suited. For other people, it is a way that they find very comfortable. And there are all sorts of mixes. So what the research has shown is, and this was just cited at another meeting, is that in a variety of analysis, and Quality Matters is a research-based organization, that the learning outcomes is the same for the students who succeed in either a face-to-face or an online. Now, we know we have to grapple with the difference in retention that's currently an issue in online learning. And part of that is, you're right, people go to online learning for some of the wrong reasons, and we have to make that very clear to them. It is not it's not easy, and it's not a lazy way to get an education, because online educators tend to want to see engagement every week from every student in their class. So students have admitted, we had one student who presented to a group of interested students and said, I never worked harder than in an online course, because the only way my mastery could be evident is my engagement with the class and with the instructor. I couldn't sit in the back of the lecture and, you know, doze off. So I think that good learning techniques and good advisement to students is needed to make sure that they're tracked into the right delivery for themselves.
First of all, I want to say that I fully support online learning. And, in fact, it's an area that we've got to find a way to say, how can we invest more in and how can we grow it? I think it needs to be part of our ongoing strategy. In fact, the prioritization process that we're going through today, we need to be looking for opportunities to say, can we put or push some of our offerings to online learning coming out of that program? It gives us an opportunity to have a school without borders. It gives us an opportunity to reach out to others that are not necessarily in our region or in our area, and possibly expand our income or our revenue stream. We have a significant investment that we've made in and around campus and in the region, and that is high-speed fiber that we have control over. That in itself is the foundation that can allow us to do some things that other institutions may struggle with. But we've got to find a way to say, how do we leverage that technology? Furthermore, being in the technology field, I would have to tell you, every now and then, new technology is introduced that's a game changer. The reality is that online learning is a game changer for higher education. And we've got to figure out, if that's the new frontier, how do we leverage that? So how do we prepare for the next five? How do we prepare for the next 10 years out? If most of our students are going to come to us and expect a rich experience from online learning, then we've got to say, how do we prepare for that? And this is not a full replacement for in the classroom, on campus learning. This is an alternative that if we're going to be successful long term, it's expected of us. And we've got to find a way to do it and do it right and make sure it's a rich offering. That's just my comment.
Okay, I guess I have one or two questions that I'd like to ask. When I saw the slide that dealt with the windmill energy, I note that there are community colleges, all not in our state, that are starting to produce the associate degree in the windmill energy technology. Do we have the capability to set up some capstone programs through the online learning for some of these programs that are around us but not quite here?
Absolutely. In fact, we have great interest from community colleges all over Illinois for now, and I'm sure it will go over our borders, in the area of advanced manufacturing, for example. 23 community colleges got a Department of Labor grant to produce graduates in advanced manufacturing. Those graduates would be meeting another barrier in their career if they don't advance to a baccalaureate. So our College of Engineering stepped up and put a capstone program online for that population. And we have had inquiries. In fact, there was a trip down to one of the, I'm trying to remember what the name was, but it was one of the community colleges down in the southern part of the state, because online, there's no borders now. And their students who would have to drive, you know, a great distance to get to a university can now access a baccalaureate program through us, through our College of Engineering. So, yeah, we are looking at, and one of my jobs is to look at those trends and to talk with community colleges all over. And I go to conferences and they'll say, here's the new, we're seeing growing interest in these particular fields. So we want to look at positioning NIU with a capstone in that area.
If I could just add something to that, the type of program that Merrill's talking about in technology is one that really reaches recruits from a population we haven't served before. It's a population that their associate's degree is the AAS, which had been previously considered a dead-end technical degree.
Terminal
technical degree, but a degree where it prepared you for the workplace and there was no expectation that you would necessarily go on and seek further higher education in the form of a baccalaureate or even a master's degree. And now people are learning that they want the additional degrees to be better citizens of the world, to advance in their jobs. And parents who are talking to community college about these programs that will launch students into the workplace immediately still see that they want in their children's future to have more higher ed in the form of a baccalaureate. So taking the AAS degree as 2 years, you can then add a year that satisfies the general education requirements that are associated with a baccalaureate, the more breadth of education, that critical thinking, liberal arts type piece. And then you can add another year in the discipline. And when you can do these online and in collaboration with community colleges, you're really preparing citizens of the world, doing workforce development, and enabling that completion target that's important in the state of Illinois to be reached more effectively.
Thank you. And I just wanted to just add one more.
She talked about that.
Oh, I just wanted to add one more comment, is that we have a lot of interest in putting some of our postgraduate certificates and master's degrees online, because they can access a wider population and they are unique in many ways. And one of the programs that's now offering a capstone experience for AAS students is our well-known, nationally recognized MPA program. They wanted a pipeline, and this was what the chair of the program said to me, I want better government. And the way I'm going to do that is take the working professionals in government and educate them to move up. So what he did is he backloaded it to take people who had technical degrees in water and sanitation, in police, in fire, and cap it with a degree that prepares them for his graduate program. So they can work
to a baccalaureate and then go into the Masters of Public Administration. So there is a thought of taking those former terminal degrees and encouraging people to move ahead because they will be the city leaders or the governmental leaders in the future. So there are programs that are thinking that way about progression for in careers.
Any other comments? Let me say then, thank you very much for some information that you could call the present, but it's taking us into the future. And thank you.
Thank you. And I have materials that I'll leave that you could take it as your leisure to review.
Thanks, Mom.
Do you have one other item on there?
Yes, I have an item that is now 8B, the oversight of academic programs. It's an item that's annually presented, usually by Vice Provost Carolyn DeDouglas, who is actually unwell and unable to be here today. So I just want to very quickly remind the board that we monitor the quality of our academic degree programs using a variety of processes, and we use those data to inform planning and decision-making about the programs. Processes that are internal to the university include our program review and assessment of learning outcomes. These are processes that are required of all programs by our regional accreditor, the Higher Learning Commission, and by the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Processes that include external constituencies or external indicators are the reviews of doctoral programs by outside evaluators, external reviews of dissertations, accreditation of particular programs, licensure and certification exams, and then, you know, we have advisory committees that provide contemporary professional viewpoints into a number of our programs. This year, we have a couple of other processes that we're looking at to consider program quality and other indicators of program performance. For the first time this year, the Illinois Board of Higher Education has established a definition of low-performing programs and asked us to report on those. And their definition is provides not the most nuanced view of what makes performance low. It considers only the average number of degrees conferred and the average enrollment. There is no indicator of quality, and there are no indicators of cost in their current definition. Using only enrollment and the number of degrees conferred, NIU fared very well. There were very few programs that were identified. Some that were identified were already eliminated. The board may remember previous eliminating a BA in Russian, and that was, you know, identified as low performing because it has no students in it because we don't offer it anymore. Some of the programs were new so that the students are not in the programs long enough to have completed, and then other programs looked like they might have some challenges related to either enrollment or degree completion, and all of those programs are undergoing program prioritization this year where things like enrollment and the number of degrees conferred are being considered in a larger context, looking at cost, looking at demand factors, looking at relationship to diversity, looking at service to other programs. And so I'm not going to spend our valuable time today really doing an extensive update on the program prioritization process and where we are, but I want to remind the board that we have a website that's updated very frequently, that's very comprehensive. On the left side of the screen, we have the latest announcements, the criteria that we're using to evaluate our programs and prioritize them, the weights of the different criteria, the composition of the task forces who will be evaluating them, all of that information is on the web and it's continually updated. And so I suggest rather than spending time with me going through that today, you follow up with me on any questions you may have.
In the past, we've received copies of those assessment reports each year. Would that be possible again this year?
Yes, absolutely. You will receive copies of those.
All right. And I think in the past, they've come in two different formats. There's a summary that's prepared for us, and then there's a full report that gets submitted to the IBHE.
There are full reports that inform the summary that goes to the IBHE, and I think what we do is provide you with the summary that goes to the IBHE and then all of the background reports drawn on campus.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Great. And I do want to say one question I get a lot is how will program prioritization change our program review process? And I do just want to get on the record that even though program review compares our programs, benchmarks them against like programs at other institutions, and program prioritization is really focused on looking at unlike programs at NIU to allocate resources and identify opportunities for growth and innovation. We are planning to align the data that are used in the two processes, and we believe that this will alleviate the work burden on faculty associated with program review over time as we link our program to our budget process more closely.
Thank you. The other committee members may have noticed Trustee Marshall left, so I'm not staging a coup, but he asked if I could continue until he got back. So, Trustee Coleman, do you have a question?
I was just wondering, are you the vice chair? Or...
The vice chair is Trustee Butler, who's also not here. So, right.
So I do have a couple of questions around program prioritization, and I'm just curious, how far into the review process are we 20% done, 10% done, 50% done? Where are we?
We're almost halfway done, probably halfway. 40% done. The narratives are due on December 11th, and the task forces that are reviewing those narratives and providing us with the ranking will be working throughout the spring.
And while we're going through the review process, is there a financial component that's put on it in terms of if we invest, we think, and if we invest and grow, we think we need to spend X, or if we eliminate, we think we could save Y? Do we have that kind of overlay?
So within the program narratives, cost is reflected in data that was supplied, costs associated with personnel and other aspects of the program. So that cost can be factored into the overall narrative about the program and returns on investments in various forms. Costs can be linked to program quality, and then there are questions within the narrative template that ask, what would you do with more resources? What could you do with more resources? And so as the task force review the programs, and the task force own those processes, we don't own those processes, they will be looking at the criteria that were determined through a broad process, the narratives that are supplied by the program authors and approved by those above the program authors, and they will be sorting the programs into categories that suggest programs that are in need of transformation or elimination on the bottom end, and programs that would benefit greatly from the investment of additional resources. Those reflections of the committee, the task force work product, will be used by the senior leadership of the university to make budget decisions and linked to a 5-year budgeting process.
Is that effective for 17 fiscal year?
It will begin in fiscal year 17.
All right. Thanks.
The final information item is one that Trustee Marshall asked me to just bring forward to the board regarding future agenda items. I want to remind the board that the items that routinely come on an annual basis to Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel include sabbatical presentation, sabbatical approval, promotion and tenure approval. And we've had a number of suggestions from board members, and so things that might come forward, and you know, maybe your feedback on some of these either today or following this meeting could be a greater update on the process we use to assess student learning, an update on strategies for serving students and sustaining the academic mission in an era of constrained resources, a relook at summer session AP credit and dual credit, recognitions of our faculty and staff, celebrations of individuals who've received professional accolades, awards, or recognitions as a result of their great efforts on and off campus, a summary of student support services on campus, and a report on the work of the Senior Associate Vice President for Academic Diversity and Chief Diversity Officer.
Also, since Trustee Struthers has actually just joined us, I am certain that you'll have a little list to add to that, and it will be welcomed.
Thank you.
Okay, just one sec. Okay, are there any other matters to come before this committee? If none,
you made a motion to close.
May I have a motion for adjournment?
So did. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.